Sunday, May the 25th.
Welcome to this Burlington Audio Podcast. We hope you will be encouraged and inspired in your faith as you listen to this message. We'd love to hear what you think. Please be in touch with us through the website. More information and many more podcasts are all at burlingtonbaptist.org.uk. Thanks for listening.
We're in the middle of this theme of hope-filled days. So we did 7 days of hope, the 7 days that led to the death and resurrection of Jesus. And now we're thinking about those 40 days, those moments in the life of Jesus after his resurrection and before his ascension up into heaven. And I've been enjoying asking questions about this season, like, where did Jesus live? Like, where did he hang out in those 40 days? Where was his home? What was going on for him? What we do know is that he appeared in numerous ways to those disciples. And we've been building up this picture that ultimately what Jesus brings to us is his presence. It was his presence that made all the difference to Mary in her grief. It was his presence that made the difference to the disciples in all their fear. It was his presence ultimately that made the difference to the two walking. I'm doing that again. I'm going to stop doing that. I did that last Sunday. Walking as if you don't know what walking is. And this is if you're on the phone, and this is if you're walking. I'm going to hold my hand behind my back. Walking on the road to Emmaus, that in the midst of their questions, it was discovering that he was there that made all the difference. And then 2 weeks ago, Peter, in his failure, it wasn't a rebuke. It wasn't even a correction about how you should behave, Peter. And do you promise to behave better next time? It was a very personal encounter. Peter, do you love me? Do you love me? Can you imagine being on a beach, having messed up, and Jesus looking you in the eyes and saying, do you love me? It was that personal encounter that changed them. And we saw last week the way that Jesus talked to them about the kingdom of God, and he talked to them about how the scriptures had always revealed himself. We would have loved to have been in those talks, in those sermons, but I began to pull some threads through the whole of the Bible, the way the whole thing points to him. So we're in this kind of in-between stage. After his suffering, he presented himself to them and gave many convincing proofs that he was alive. He appeared to them over a period of 40 days and spoke about the kingdom of God. And then what? Then what? He ascended. After he said this, he was taken up before their very eyes, and a cloud hid him from their sight. We call it the ascension, but we don't bother with it very much, do we? At least not in our tradition. In some other Christian traditions, they make a bit more effort with the ascension. And it got me wondering why we don't bother very much with the ascension. Is it because at Christmas you get presents, at Easter you get chocolate, but at the ascension, what do you get? Not a lot. No, not a lot. Seems a bit of a empty kind of. Is it because Christmas you get holidays, and Easter you get holidays, and the ascension you go to work? Because it's going to be this, when is the ascension? Who knows when it is? Wednesday's a pretty good guess. Next day, Thursday. So we're not even sure when it is. We just kind of know that it sort of happened. And we don't really focus on it. And I wonder why it's become not very important to us in our tradition. Why is this moment almost overlooked? And I have to confess, that would be true in my journey, in my story. I haven't really dug as deep into the ascension as perhaps some other areas. And maybe that's fine. But maybe there's another reason. I wonder if there's another reason that we don't really dig into the ascension. And that's that we're not very impressed with it. We're not very impressed with it. There is something about it that resonates deeply with us that's disturbing. Look how Luke was a doctor, so he was sensitive, we trust, to feelings and emotions and what was going on. Look at how Luke described it in the passage that Francis read for us. When he'd led them out to the vicinity of Bethany, he lifted up his hands and blessed them. So far, so good. We like a blessing, don't we? I wouldn't mind Jesus lifting up his hands and blessing me. I'd be in for that. Then, while he was blessing them, what does it say? He left them. Just feel the weight of that for a minute. They'd given up everything for Jesus. And what did he do? He just left. Whoa, hang on. Wait a minute. You can't just leave. Where are you going? The issue about the ascension for us that resonates really deeply is that there is an anxiety that we carry about a God who in the end just leaves us. Have you ever been in a situation where you felt that God has left you? Come on. Now we're talking, aren't we? Suddenly this festival has something to say to me. Because I'm with those disciples. I want the blessing to keep coming. And I read that he just got up and walked out. They sang "The Day Thou Gave Us, Lord, Has Ended." And he cleared off. Wait a minute. Where are you going? Discover the ascension. It's for when it feels like he's left us. So when he feels like he's left us. And being left is hugely impactful. If you think about some of your traumatic childhood memories, being left will be a really important one of those. You probably weren't left, but it felt like it. I can remember sitting by the back door in our house when I knew that I was under five because of the house that we were in. My mum had popped out to, I tell you what she popped out to do. She'd popped out to take the Corona bottles back to the man on the van. Who knows what I'm talking about now? Who hasn't got a clue what I'm talking about? Let me tell you what happens then. Let me educate you. We would get pop, as in sickly, sweet, kind of flavored, fizzy stuff. You know, the pre-SodaStream generation. Who knows what a SodaStream is? Oh, another group of people now in the life of the church. We're crossing all the generational boundaries now. And you would fill up the pop in a glass bottle, but the glass bottle was really precious, so you would give it back. Recycling right there in the 1970s. Come on, they were way ahead of their time. But the reason that you did it, because if you took them and gave the little top back, how much would you get back? Who remembers? 10 pence. Who said that? Yes, come on, Barney, right in there. 10 pence back. And that was worth its weight in gold. Why am I saying all this? Oh, because my mum had gone out and I didn't know where she was. And I can remember sitting at the back door feeling like I was just abandoned. I mean, this seemed to go on for hours in my four-year-old world, but it's just a moment. Because there's something deep inside us that fears that abandonment because we've become alienated from God. You with me? Adam and Eve were abandoned. They created their own abandonment, but that's how it felt. And they hid and all the stuff we've been thinking about recently. And so there's this deep resonance that God might be good for a while. And he might be true for his promises sometimes. But in the end, maybe God, just like everybody else, clears off. And many of us will feel like that in different situations about our experiences. I can trust this person, this situation, this environment for so long. But in the end, it all goes to rack and ruin. In the end, it never comes true. It looked like it was going to be a great experience. But in the end, it was just like everything else. And we live with this deep resonance that in the end, even Jesus, for all his promises, might clear off. And as it said in Luke describes again in the book of Acts, he's hidden from their sight. Who knows what it is for God to feel hidden from your sight? So discovering the ascension when it feels like he's left us, we resonate with that. And that's maybe why we don't send cards to each other and buy gifts and have a holiday. But maybe we should. It'd be fun. How many times, like Martha, remember the story? Martha had a brother named Lazarus. And Lazarus died and Jesus wasn't there. And eventually Jesus shows up at the iPod, the intentional place of discipleship this morning. We're talking about the way that Jesus never rushed anywhere, but he seemed to turn up at all the right time in the right places. So Jesus didn't rush. And he kind of wanders down after how many days? 4 days. Why is that important? Anyone know? Because the Jewish tradition believed that after 3 days, your soul would hover over your body, but after 3 days, you were totally gone. You know, you were totally gone. And that's this kind of school of the thought that I have. You can do what you want with my body, but just make sure I'm really dead, yeah? you know, double check, triple check. Give it a few days, yeah? Don't get too excited. Don't put me out early. Just check. 4 days. So in other words, all hope had gone. Lazarus was properly dead. He wasn't just in a bit of a sleep. He wasn't just in that. He was gone. And then Jesus just wanders in as if he hasn't got a care in the world. And what does Martha say? Martha says what we have all said so many times. If you had been here. And we've lived like that. We've imagined. What would it be like? How different would it have been? How transforming would that have experienced if Jesus had actually been here? But somehow we think he's left. He's gone. He's just like everybody else. When we needed him the most, he wasn't actually there. If only Jesus was in the boat when we were in our particular storm. If only Jesus was at the wedding when we ran out of what we needed. If only Jesus visited the hospital. If you had been here, it wouldn't have happened. Which makes some of the things that Jesus said particularly hard to swallow. Jesus says, very truly I tell you, it is for your good, other versions have, it's for your advantage, it's for your blessing, that I am what? Going away. What? No, hang about. That's the last thing, Jesus, we want, is for you to go away. That's the worst scenario, that you would leave us. Don't leave me now. Back to your young child. The worst thing, the parent is going to leave, even for a moment, an hour, a day, a week. Whatever you do, don't go. Don't go. And there is something about that presence of, take the child and the parent, that is so kind of rooted and reassuring. I can remember when one of our kids flew out to meet me in the south of France, and they'd spent a few days on their own, and they got through the gate into the kind of welcome arrivals area and just dumped their passport, their tickets, their travel documents, their money, just gave it all to me and said, I don't have to worry about anything anymore. You know, it's like I've been on my own, and it's like, but now I'm back. And it creates for us a kind of siege mentality that Jesus has left and we've just got to hold on now until he gets back. And if we hunker down, hold on to each other, close the doors, then we can get through. But Jesus is saying, it's for your good that I'm going away. And he makes these promises that turned out not to be true, didn't they? I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you, really? Well, we've all heard those kind of promises, and we've all felt very alone. And of course, we know, as I was saying, that promise that he'll come back. So, and it's like we're just clinging on. You know, I think sometimes our Christian life is like me, the 4-year-old. I'm crying at the back door because I think I'm on my own. And I can't possibly do anything or move or nothing can happen. I've just got to hold on and pray and hope one day a parent will show up. Turned out they did eventually, which is good news. You know, and if we just hold on, and there are so many kind of traditions that have got themselves stuck, haven't they? And maybe in our own life, I've just got to hold on, and one day Jesus will come back and it'll be okay. But until then, our backs are to the wall. Let's lock the doors. Let's hunker down. Let's keep doing our thing, but let's not cause too much of a stir. And we have this kind of barricade you're in, the castle mentality, the English man or woman in their castle. But then there was one verse, this time, with the ascension that really grabbed me. You won't have had this experience, I'm sure, but I must have read this verse hundreds and hundreds of times. I'd never seen it. You ever had verses like that? You think, I've seen that. I've seen this. I must have read this 1,000 times and never, ever seen it. And it whacked me. It's in Ephesians 4, where Paul is talking about the ascension. And the verse went like this. He who descended is the very one who ascended higher than all the heavens in order to fill the whole universe. Never seen it. I kind of knew it, but never seen it. If he is ascended, he will fill the whole universe. Isn't that a game changer? Where is Jesus now? He's not there. He's everywhere. Where is Jesus now? He's not locked in being a local Galilean preacher around the shores of Galilee, or even a preacher prophet in Jerusalem. No, suddenly he's not caught in first century Palestine, but he is everywhere. 21st century Ipswich. Yeah, great. Hope you cheer a bit better this afternoon. And suddenly, it's not that Jesus was just there in that moment, but now, incredibly, he's in all the moments. Feel the weight of that. Feel the reality of what the ascension is bringing to us, that Jesus is in all our moments. He is everywhere. And no longer trapped in the finiteness of being human. If he fills the whole heavens, he's ascended to higher than the heavens. He's above the heavens. So discovering the ascension, when it feels like he's left us, it's actually that he fills even the very place where we breathe and move and have our being. And some of us have got stuck at the first truth. Some of us could be like what the angel said to those disciples. Don't just stay there looking up into the sky. Don't get stuck in this moment that it's all about me going. Embrace the reality of what's about to happen. The Jesus that was here and now is now going to be the Jesus that's everywhere. The Jesus of this moment will be the one for all moments. That's the game changer of the ascension. So think about the moments where it feels like God has left. And boy, there are so many of those, aren't there? So many of those. What if he's closer than we think? What if he's closer than we think? So instead of being somewhere, somehow now he's everywhere. Can I embrace that? Do I have faith for that? I feel like the father who says, yeah, I believe, but you've got to help my unbelief. Because sometimes I just feel like you've left. Sometimes I feel like you're hidden from my sight and I can't see you. So discovering the ascension when it feels like he's left, it's actually when he fills all things. And that's what Jesus really wanted those disciples to get a handle on. It comes again and again and again, but I think we miss it because our focus is in other places. So, for example, therefore go into all the world and make disciples and so on and do all the stuff that we talk about. And what does it say? I'll be with you always. I'll be there at every moment. When you get pulled before the Sanhedrin and the religious authorities and persecuted for speaking about me, I will give you the words to say. I will be there with you. When you face the darkest valley, I will be there with you. I will be in it with you. When you face that uncertain future, I will be there with you. I will be in it with you. As you go and make disciples, I will be with you to the ends of the age. And the interesting thing about those verses that we've often talked about for different reasons is that the word kind of peoples to is not so much nations on a big scale, but it's every little group of people. You know, the people in Ipswich that love line dancing. Where did I get that from? It's the first thing that came into my head. The people in Ipswich who love vintage cars, the people who, you know, all different types of people, types of groups, people who get excited to go out and people who love to stay in, people who can't stop talking and people that don't talk enough, the whole lot, whatever group, however you categorize anybody, we're going to make disciples of all of those people, and he will be with us with all of those people in every place, in every situation. And of course, there's nothing new about that. The psalmist discovered that centuries before when he said, you know, well, what I've discovered is there's nowhere I can go where God doesn't show up. If I go to the heavens, you are there. If I go to the far side of the earth, you are there. There's nowhere I can go where you don't show up. And so this invitation of the ascension is to remember that we can't get stuck with the reality that he has left. We need to embrace the fullness that he is now here. as he would say, I will not leave you as orphans, I will come to you. And not only does the ascension remind us that Jesus shows up, I mean, that's pretty cool in itself, isn't it? But the Jesus that shows up is not just the physical human confines of a Jesus trapped in the scandal of particularity, as it's known, that Jesus should be born a Jew and a Galilean and speak with an accent from Nazareth. And it's not just that he shows up with all of those limitations. He is the one who shows up supreme everywhere. So not only does the ascension remind us that Jesus will show up filling the whole universe, it reminds us that the Jesus that shows up is the one who is supreme over the whole thing. Not just the church, but the whole universe. It fills, as Paul wrote to the Ephesians, the whole universe. And that's what the early church needed to be reminded of again and again and again and again, because they felt small and insignificant and felt like they didn't know whether they could get out there and make a difference. They needed to be reminded, because they felt a bit like us sometimes, a siege mentality. The world out there is bad. It's overpowering. There are big idols and powers and gods at work in the world. And the best thing that we can do is hunker down and sing our songs and hope he comes back soon. And Colossians felt like that in the midst of the Roman Empire, when there were huge powers of darkness at work in the world. Sound familiar? When everyone was worshiping everything else but Jesus. And there was just a few of them. Sound familiar? And they struggled to make sense of it. It looks like the ways of the world are winning. It looks like Satan's running amok. It looks like the powers of evil are overwhelming. And Paul writes to the little Colossian church, and he says, you've got to remember the ascended Jesus. You've got to remember that this Jesus not only shows up where you are, but he is supreme over the whole thing. Verses like this: he is the Son. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things, not some things, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before some things? No, all things. And in him, some things hold together? No, all things hold together. And he is the head of the body of the church. In other words, he's the head of us as well. So that in everything, he might have the supremacy. That's the vision of the ascension. And we need to get it back on our calendars, don't you think? If that's true, if God shows up in every place, and in every place he's supreme, there isn't a place where he is utterly unable to rule and to reign. He has the whole thing in the palm of his hand. And the best example of God having the whole thing in the palm of his hand is that his purpose works with consistent momentum towards fulfilling his purpose in the world. Exactly the same thing that John the Apostle needed to know. He was an old man. Old men can be reflective. Old men can also be stupid, but sometimes they can be reflective. And he's sitting in the Isle of Patmos, sun shining, sea's blue, goes for a swim. And he's kind of in exile there. He can't get away from it, but hey, there are worse places to be exiled, aren't there, than in Greece. Sounded like a Thompson's holiday, really, to me. But anyway, surveying the whole scene at the end of his life, and he's going, I wonder if this church will make it. Can you imagine? There were just little pockets of church all over the known empire. You know, come to people like us at Burlington and go, well, they're a pretty ragtag bunch of people. Wonder if they'll make it. Wonder if they'll survive the huge swathes of darkness of the Roman Empire, the huge waves of persecution. And he gets this vision of Jesus, not Jesus on the cross, not even Jesus the miracle worker, or Jesus asleep in the boat, or Jesus the storyteller, but he gets this picture of the ascended Jesus, the Jesus that holds the whole thing in his hands. And you'll be familiar perhaps with some of those words in the first chapter of Revelation. I turned round to see the voice that was speaking to me. And when I turned, I saw the seven golden lampstands. And among the lampstands was someone like a son of man, dressed in a robe, reaching down to his feet, and with a gold sash around his chest. His hair on his head was white like wool, as white as snow. And his eyes were like blazing fire. His feet were like bronze glowing in a furnace. And his voice was like the sound of rushing waters. In his right hand he held seven stars. And coming out of his mouth was a sharp double-edged sword. All sorts of imagery and stuff, some of which might need unpacking for us someday. It might not be our language or our image, but basically it's saying Jesus has got the whole lot. And then it says something amazing. His face was like the sun, shining in all its brilliance. His face was like the sun, shining in all its brilliance. That's what we need to see. That's the invitation of the ascension. Not to stand looking at the clouds going, where's he gone? But to discover that he's here the whole time, showing up where we least expect it, in the most unlikely place, and showing up supreme. So what? When it feels like he's left, the fact is he's filled all things. Discovering the ascension is all about when I need him the most. He's not gone from me. He's given to me. You feel that for a moment? Where we think he's gone and left, he is a gift to you there. It's hard to reconcile some of our feelings of loneliness and abandonment and all of that. That's a process for sure. But the reality is, in those places where we feel like he's gone, the ascension reminds us that he's a gift. Closer, deeper, richer, fuller than he might ever be. So where do I need him the most this week as I celebrate the ascension? I need him on the school run because I'm barely getting through the day. Do I get an amen for that? I need him in the boardroom because it's out of control. I need him when I'm cleaning the house because it seems so mundane and yet it's so beautiful. I need it when I'm weeping with a friend and I just can't fix the situation that they're in. I need it when I'm revising for my exams and I think, gosh, is this the gateway to adulthood? Probably not, by the way. Keep it a secret, but those exams don't matter, do they? Really very much. How many of you got up this morning and said, I'm so glad I smashed my GCSEs? To be honest, most of you went, GCSEs, what the heck's that? So glad I smashed my O-levels. Or you got up and thought, and I made a right hash of my O-levels, but it hasn't mattered one hoot. In the end, God works his purpose out, right? Anyway, don't tell him that. We've got to keep him working. Apparently. When I need him the most in my friendships, in my family, in every moment. So I'm inviting you. I'm inviting you to think of a moment this week. Not in a month's time, but this week. Think of a moment just quietly before God this week. How does it change the reality to know that God is there, that Jesus shows up there this week? Where do you need him the most this week? And what difference would it make to discover he is truly present? What difference would it make? You know the questions? What's God saying? What are you going to do about it? You know the middle question? How does it make me feel? Got to pay attention to our feelings or we'll just get locked, stuck. Where do you need him the most? And what difference would it make to discover he's truly present? In those moments when your heart is, oh, if only Jesus was here. If only Jesus had come when we needed him. If only he was here. There's times when you say, Jesus, I'm looking up to the clouds and he's hidden from my sight. or that situation that happened and you agreed in your spirit, that's it, Jesus has left. He's abandoned me here. In those places, in those moments, where do you need him the most? And what difference would it make to discover he is truly present? This is not easy. It's not easy to trust again when it feels like our trust was broken. It's not easy to believe again when it feels like the situation has showered us in unbelief. And so the prayer that very simply we're going to agree together is that God would help us. We're not going to work it up, get ourselves into all striving and as if we can do it ourselves, as if we can fix ourselves. We're not going to sing songs for 100 years as if that will make us feel more bold or courageous. We're just going to say, Jesus, would you help me? Would you help me to believe again that in that situation you never left? Would you help me to believe again that you can show up supremely in that place, that where I assume you've gone, this week, you are a gift to me there. And my invitation is to invite you to stand, and just in standing, you're just simply saying, Jesus, help me. Help me. Jesus, help me. I need the help of your Spirit to believe again. Jesus, help me. And then we'll pray together. So if you're in that space, of just there's this moment, it's hard to believe that Jesus is there. And you just want to ask Jesus to help you, then would you stand? Jesus, you know it all, you see it all. You see and know the cries of our hearts. Forgive me where I got stuck looking up at the sky and thought to myself, I've just got to wait till you come back. And I missed the whole thing. Would you take the reality of the ascension and make it real this week in the experience of my brothers and sisters, in my own experience? So I'm asking for your help, for the gift of faith, for the gift of belief, that you'd minister to where I've agreed with loneliness and isolation, to minister to me where I've given up hope, and meet me there. Jesus. Because what we believe more than anything is that you are alive. More than ever, you are ever present. And as John saw your face in all its brilliance, help me. Help me to see your face in all its brilliance. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face.
And the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace.
So we encourage each other.
Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in His wonderful face. And the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace.
Let's be still for a few moments in His beautiful presence. Love you just to take a moment, perhaps with the person next to you or a couple of people around you, and just invite them, and we all need to do it for each other, just invite them to pray for you, that you would see Jesus show up wherever that is. Just share something that's appropriate, no pressure, allow someone else to pray for you, that we would see Jesus show up this week. That would be a beautiful celebration of what the ascension is all about. Let's do that now, just for a couple of minutes.